morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world.
Welcome back to Developpod, the Teacher Development Special Interest Group podcast from IATEFL. And I'm here in the virtual studio with James Taylor. Hi, welcome back, James.
Hi, Christian. Lovely to be back. And we've got a great episode today. We're going to hear an interview that Tanya has done with Patrice Palmer. And then afterwards, we're going to have a little chat about it. So can you tell us a bit about Patrice and who she is?
Patrice is the author of a book entitled The Teacher Self-Care Manual, Simple Strategies for Stressed Teachers. And she works very much in the teacher self-care domain. Patrice has been in the educational industry for around about 23 years, as I understand, and has experience as an adult educator, trainer, and writer, and has studied positive psychology and positive education. So she's going to be talking about teacher empowerment. Is that right, James?
Yes, that's right. So let's listen to the interview, and then after we'll come back and have a chat about it.
In your experience, how do you interpret the idea of teacher empowerment? What does it mean to you as a teacher, as well as someone who works so much with teachers?
Well, you know, I have to really go away and think about it, because in my 20-year career, it's not something that I ever heard other teachers say, well, what about our empowerment? You know, how are we going to feel more empowered? Mm-hmm. And so I really started thinking about, first of all, what it means. Mm-hmm. And so I think teacher empowerment happens in three areas. It's in our classroom with our students. It's in our schools, in programs, for example. And then it's outside the classroom. So in terms of our own professional development and self-care. So I would say it's about decision-making. Is feeling some power, that we have authority or autonomy, and maybe choice. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we may have a lot of autonomy or choice to do things in our own classrooms, but we feel more constrained in our schools or in certain programs. But then I think where we can be most empowered is in our own lives outside of school, and how do we see ourselves as teachers, as moms, as partners, as everything else, and not just, you know, kind of constantly wearing "I'm a teacher" everywhere I go, and how that.
Okay. Let's take a step back for a second. So I think the breakdown of agency and empowerment in the classroom, in your employment context and outside of the school, I think that's a really nice framework to structure it. So you started by saying that teachers often don't feel they have a lot of empowerment outside of the classroom. The classroom seems to be that place where they seem to have the most agency. Well, what do you feel hinders that in schools, for example?
I think it really is not knowing what empowerment looks like, or not seeing it modeled by others. So, for example, when I was a part-time college faculty, I did see full-time faculty occasionally model empowerment, and they seem to be confident and not necessarily outspoken, but they could get across their opinions, and I believe that they were listened to. And for somebody who, you know, was on a contract and maybe not trying to rock the boat, you know, I'd find myself kind of shaking my head saying, yes, I agree with them, but not really feeling like I could speak out. And, you know, I think that was the main situation for me. Mm-hmm. I think there's always the fear of speaking out and being labeled a troublemaker. Yeah. I think, you know, we work in an environment where we're part of a team. It's our department, it's our school. And so, you know, those individuals that, you know, rock the boat or, you know, always trying to kind of, you know, push the agenda. Sometimes they're seen as, oh, you know, there she goes again, or there he goes again. So just, you know, trying to be under the radar. I think, you know, we really just don't know how to do it. We don't know how to maybe advocate for ourselves. We don't know how to ask for what we need or what we want. You know, we spend so much time helping our students be advocates for themselves and, you know, how to use language to communicate effectively. But, you know, we kind of forget, well, wait a minute, I'm not really practicing what I preach. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of starts from our teacher training programs where emphasis really is on students. And I talk to a lot of teachers about this. It's about, you know, the students, and that's great, but sometimes we forget that a really important piece is the teacher. And can we support both? You know, can we have an environment where we empower students, but we feel empowered ourselves? It's kind of an odd, you know, approach where you would be helping others do what we should be doing for ourselves. But again, I think we just don't talk about it. We don't think about it. It's not really...
I agree. I think that that definitely speaks to my experience as well, that the people who do tend to speak up, who are a little, maybe a little more clearer about wants and needs in the school context, they tread a fine line and I think can be seen as potential troublemakers. But I do think that what you've said is really key, that teachers don't necessarily know how to do it. They don't really know what it looks like. So there's no real model. And I would also say that maybe there isn't necessarily a safe forum, a space that's already expected or created in the school as well. Would you agree with that?
I think so. You know, and a lot of it just depends on the leadership. You know, often deans or leaders or head teachers will say, you know, we have an open door policy. You can come and talk to me about anything. In meetings, please speak up. But then, you know, you might feel kind of embarrassed about speaking out, or you might feel shut down, or if time and time again, you put something forward and nothing happens, and you're going to feel, you know, what's the point of this? But, you know, while I was listening to you, you just reminded me of, before I was a teacher, I was an international development worker, and we talked a lot about empowering the people we supported around the world. And one of the books that I remember reading was called Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. And I don't know why I've remembered it, but the whole idea is if you want to get something done, you do the work outside the meeting or outside the forum. And so I might say to you, oh, Tanya, I have an idea about making a change. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems a bit sinister, but, you know, obviously, you know, preparing ahead of time and having a group of people that will support you in your ideas is probably more sensible than being that one person. Mm. So I think if you feel really passionate about something that needs to be looked at or needs to change, you know, start with talking to another teacher, kind of build your group, and then you've got, you know, power in number. So,
Okay. Yeah, definitely. That sounds like a certainly an important piece of advice for how teachers can begin to feel a bit more empowered. Do you have any other suggestions for that as well?
I think maybe searching out a more senior person, or especially when we're first starting out, you know, there are those teachers that I remember just seem to be so knowledgeable and confident, and, you know, they've been at it a long time, and, you know, kind of thinking like, oh, I wish I was, you know, more like her or him. So approaching that teacher and asking them to mentor you. You know, I don't think we do that enough. And I hear from a lot of new teachers that, you know, I'd really love a mentor. And I said, I would have loved being a mentor, but nobody ever asked me. So again, you know, maybe modeling that. Mm-hmm. So just encouraging, you know, more senior or experienced teachers, mentoring new teachers, because we know it's a tough couple of years when you're Absolutely. First getting started. And, you know, you're really kind of in survival mode where you're just trying to get through a lesson, get through your prep, your marking, and empowerment really is just not on the to-do list.
I think I totally agree. I think that's a fantastic idea. As you said, like having that ability to tap into someone who has so much more experience, knows the system, knows the context in more detail, and, you know, knows the, I'm not sure if politics is the right term, but in every, well, the culture, I guess, is maybe the better term for it. Because every school and every different institution I've worked at has a very different culture. And when you're new to that culture, it can be very hard to navigate it initially.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, if you're at one school for a very long time, you just accept that that's the way it is at every school. And that's certainly not the case. And so much just depends on the leadership. And so, you know, maybe when you're job hunting, that's a question that you want to ask, you know, more about the culture. You want to talk about the teachers who work there. You just kind of want to do more of a dig in terms of the culture, if you think that's important to you. And, you know, I think our field is very small. I don't think that, you know, it's a big secret that, you know, that school is, you know, more formal in its approach, or that, you know, school's leader is into empowering teachers. So, you know, and then I guess the other thing is, at some point in your career, do you want to become a school leader? You know, that's an option. You know, we don't always have to remain in the classroom, but, you know, do we want to manage a department? Do we want to manage a group of teachers, or be part of a leader that, you know, feels that good thing? So, you know, it makes me think about, you know, schools out there, and maybe some examples of how schools or departments are encouraging teachers to empower themselves. So you kind of got me thinking about, you know, maybe some best practices and what it looks like.
Well, it does kind of lead me to the last question then. Are there other resources that you recommend?
Well, I did a Google search, and there are, you know, if you're into reading journal articles, you can do a Google Scholar search. And there hasn't really been anything recently published. And so it kind of makes me think, you know, was teacher empowerment sort of a trend a while ago, and maybe there were conferences and people were researching a particular topic, and then, you know, something else kind of
fizzled out or something?
Yeah, and something else sort of became more popular. So, you know, I'm kind of curious about if people have done presentations at conferences, and has it been a conference theme? I think it would be a really interesting conference theme. And so I did find one book, and of course we always love free things. So there's a free chapter for 13 Steps to Teacher Empowerment. And the authors are Zemelman and Ross. And even just in their little introduction on the webpage, they talk about taking small steps. And I think it just makes sense that anything new that we undertake, we just start small and see how it goes. So, you know, they suggest taking these small steps to first to improve our teaching, and then our work-life balance, our schools, and then start to look at larger school improvements. But I think, you know, a lot of school, I know at colleges they have unions. The college that I was at, they had a couple of different union groups that teachers could be part of. I think a wellness group, maybe starting committees at your school. I recently talked to a teacher in Saskatoon, and she's now part of a teacher wellness group. And I know that that is certainly taking off, especially in the UK and Australia. So looking at a group of teachers coming together around an issue. And again, you know, it's that power in numbers. You know, don't try to take on a big issue yourself. You're certainly going to burn out if you do that. So, you know, seeing about different committees and you know, how some committees might even be students and teachers, you know, depending on the issue. So helping students understand how to advocate, bringing students into that group and having them sort of see how it's modeled and how it's done.
And I liked what you said earlier about how it seems to start even from the teacher training programs. Can there be kind of an additional course, an additional component, a new syllabus piece that does actually deal with empowerment and, as you said, self-care, wellness issues, respecting the teacher as a person themselves that needs that attention?
I think we're on the same page. So this weekend I'm presenting and my topic is teacher self-care a thing, because a teacher had actually said that to me. She's like, teacher self-care is a thing? And I'm like, yeah, it's a thing. Like, there are conferences now. And so I thought, okay, what are the five reasons why we think it's not a thing? And my number one reason is because we don't learn about it. Mm-hmm. And so we don't talk about it in our teacher training program. So I've recently been to a TESOL diploma program. Mm-hmm. Twice now, talking to students in that class about teacher self-care. And I think, you know, this is where it starts. So, you know, even just saying it's okay to say no, you know, no is a complete sentence. you don't always have to say yes to absolutely everything. You know, having that, I guess it's that, you know, sense of, you know, power or decision making that you can say, well, wait a minute, you know, I've got this workload, I really can't take that on. So I think we do need to start talking about it. You know, we're very concerned with student well-being, and that's a great thing. We should be, but we can't keep ignoring all the research that supports, you know, the stress and burnout in the teaching profession. It's there, you know, it's been out for decades. And yes. So, you know, I talked to a teacher on the weekend who is putting together a teacher self-care PD day at their school, and they had been fighting for about a year, and finally, you know, the management said, okay, you can do it, but, you know, you have to do it next month, and they're scrambling to find people. But I just said, you know, good for you for having this committee and pushing it, because again, it was a group of teachers that kept saying, you know, we need to do this, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we can make change if we've got a group of people behind us supporting it. So, you know, that was good news. That was exciting.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for speaking to me today. It's been an interesting conversation.
Thank you again. It was really fun.
Okay, so we're back after the interview. Thank you to Patrice and Tanya, of course. Christian, I know you're someone who's given a lot of thought over the years to teacher well-being and related issues. So I'm quite interested to know, firstly, I mean, what does teacher empowerment mean to you?
Well, from a personal angle, two things jump out for me. I've always wanted to be empowered and autonomous as a teacher and as a teacher trainer and manager. And that has happened throughout my career. I think largely because I've carved that out for myself. It's not given to you on a plate. But organizations can help with that, most certainly. And culturally, I've tried to create those conditions wherever I possibly could. We'll come back to that. And secondly, I very much identify with Patrice Palmer, as I think many of us can. In terms of that burnout, I've had burnout as a manager. And self-care is extremely important, and I think companies can do much, much more to promote that. That said, that's only a part of teacher empowerment for me. It's one part.
Well, what about on a more academic level? What does the term mean to you in that way?
Well, first of all, I started by looking up a definition of empowerment just on a simple web search. And what came up was quite interesting. Empowerment, it says, is the authority or power given to do something. Individuals are given empowerment to create their own dwellings, is the example. Now, what strikes me there is that it's handed to someone, it's given. And the second definition within the same entry was the process of becoming stronger and more confident, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. An example was political steps for empowerment of women. So it, for me, it's neither one thing or the other. It's neither given or taken. It's shared. It's a shared empowerment, a shared control, a shared responsibility, a shared autonomy. And for me, I don't think there's anything which is truly autonomous. We are interconnected beings, and indeed the teachers and the whole structure within which the teachers work, the school and the management system are interrelated, if you like.
Yeah.
I then looked up a more academic definition, and I found a few articles. Indeed, Patrice talks about the 90s particularly being flavor of the month for teacher development research. And I found an article, you can find it online, by Bogler and Somech, and we can quote that article. The definition they gave was this: empowerment is defined as a process whereby school participants develop the competence to take charge of their own growth and resolve their own problems. Apparently that's on page 38, and we'll quote the reference here. So for me, that's two parts. It seems to be really focusing on taking charge of their own professional development, something we focus very much here on DevelopPod, and resolve their own problems. Well, maybe in the classroom, maybe within the school more widely, maybe outside the school, but it doesn't really say. So Patrice also used several words which were resonant for me: decision-making, authority, autonomy, and choice. And what was very concrete for me was that she broke autonomy, or empowerment, I should say, into three areas: in the classroom with students, within schools, and outside the classroom in terms of professional development. And she spoke a lot about self-care, for example, her area. To make it more practical, James, what do you think teachers can do, particularly in their classrooms with students, an area that she mentioned we might be able to develop or have automatically more empowerment?
I think that's the interesting question, because I think that when you talk about this subject, that's where the rub is, right? Because you can have ideas about what you need to be more empowered, but then you may work for an institution which is directly in conflict with what those needs may be. And I think that it's a very individual thing that teachers are going to have to, you know, find a way to negotiate that potential conflict between what they need and what they can do. I think that's something that all teachers experience to some degree, whether it could be, you know, mandated parts of your lesson that you are required to teach, or things that you are required to do as a teacher in running those lessons and being organized. I always think of something I saw Hugh Deller mention once, where he was asked on a webinar by a teacher who said, I really like your ideas, but I'm not really sure how my institution would feel about it, even though I think it would be best for my students. And Hugh, in his own inimitable fashion, just said, well, basically, you know what's best for your students. Do what you think is right until they appear, and then do what they want you to do for that lesson. And then once they go back to doing what you think is right. Now, of course, that's easier said than done, maybe. But I don't know, you're a manager, Christian. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm a manager and a teacher. And I think when I was full-time in the classroom, up until last week, I was teaching a wonderful pre-intermediate group. I was managing to balance the needs of the syllabus with the needs of the students, I think, and the feedback was excellent. And I was largely using the course book, partly because I didn't have all that much time to find, gather, and create other materials. I did, but not a huge amount. But in our institution, we insist, in theory, on 50 to 60% of the syllabus being led by the course book. That's not to say it has to be done exactly how it is. Of course, it needs to be exploited. But there are maybe some elements within our teaching cohort who just do their own thing. And the teacher I concerned, actually, I pointed this out to, and this teacher has gone back to basics and looking at the course book and how to use that in a positive, constructive way. And that's been useful, she says, for her own professional development. Ultimately, I think it's always a shared, as I say, a shared autonomy. There'll be needs of the syllabus, needs of the students, needs of the teacher, what they prefer to do. And ultimately, those things need to come together. And it's a misnomer that a teacher can be completely autonomous within the classroom. That is the area where they feel most autonomous. And it's about ultimately providing for the students' needs. And ultimately, as a manager, I would prefer a teacher to be a maverick and butler system if it provides for the students. But do they always know what the students are thinking? That's the thing. Do they always know that those students, all of the students, are pleased? That's where the management takes stock.
Yeah, and are there principles behind it? You know, that's the thing.
Exactly.
Is it? And of course, this isn't just in terms of what is being taught, but how the classroom is managed and administrated and these things as well.
One thing that was interesting for me, they talked about mentoring, and I think that can really enable a teacher to feel empowered. I have never been mentored. I don't know about you. It was interesting. They were saying the same thing, except within the rigid confines of training up to be a CELTA tutor, for example. How about you, James? Have you been mentored?
I have been mentored, and I have mentored myself. Yeah, and not for too long, but a school that I worked for did have a mentor program. I mean, I was literally called a branch mentor, and I looked after some of the more inexperienced teachers. Went and observed their lessons, had feedback sessions, followed up. It was a great experience for me. One of the best experiences. It was extremely valuable for me, and I hope it was valuable for the teachers as well. Obviously, I think so.
Did you feel more empowered as a result?
For myself, yes. I definitely felt that there was the autonomy, and it was the absolutely crucial thing was what you mentioned was the sharing. Right, it was a shared experience. It was very important to me that I went into the classroom and I said to the teacher, I said, you know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. We're here together to talk about your lessons and to see how they could be better for the students, right? So it's a very, very important how you approach that experience. If you approach it as in, I'm going to tell you how to be better, it's never going to work. That sharing aspect is absolutely crucial to it. And it was very rewarding. But obviously, the key thing, if you're a mentor, is not so much that it's rewarding for you, but that it's rewarding for the teacher that you're helping, yeah. Right?
Well, it can work both ways, I think. I've set up mentoring programs before, and the most positive feedback has when it's been a shared experience and when the person being mentored feels like they have an input in terms of what they're learning. I think that's crucial. So I certainly plan to do that much more myself in terms of mentoring others, but also I think their point of just asking to be mentored is a crucial one, because sometimes it just slips by the management in terms of organizing such things.
Yeah, but I do think that it shouldn't come down to that. I don't Teachers should be asking to be mentored. I think that institutions should provide mentoring as just a natural part of the organization of any school.
Yeah, at any level, to be honest, yeah.
Yeah.
So they mentioned to refocus those three areas within the classroom, with students, within schools themselves, and outside the classroom in terms of professional development and self-care. The third aspect, we can allow that to speak for itself within the interview. I think we can look at that more, but I did an interview with Elena Ochenska a little while back, so our listeners can look at that. But I think to look at empowerment within schools themselves and the cultural aspect is for me the most interesting and perhaps the furthest from most organizations, that we need to do much more there to allow everyone to feel empowered. It made me think of a book I read back in the day by Ricardo Semler called Maverick. Now, Ricardo won various prizes and was an inspiration for big blue chip companies and was featured in Time magazine and its global 100 young leaders worldwide. And he inspired me. He inherited a big company, industrial company, and looked to democratize that company. In the early 2000s, I planned to open up a school and wrote a business proposal for that based on a democratic system, a truly democratic system where teachers have a voice. And I've really never heard of this within the EFL world, and wonder why. And I think that's because we're so embedded in capitalism and a hierarchical structure that it's so far away from the way people think that would take a revolution. This is how teachers can be empowered, I think. A profit-sharing system, educating teachers in the finances of the business, giving them a real say in how the business operates and on every level of the company. And in the experience of Ricardo Semler, it worked. There's no reason why it couldn't work in a school.
That's a really interesting perspective, Christian. In fact, I think perhaps that would make a good future episode of DevelopPod, don't you think?
I do. And they mentioned that people don't know what teacher empowerment looks like. I think it would. And let's analyze that a bit more.
Yeah, so if you work or own a school that has an alternative method of management, then let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, I think that brings us to the end of this episode of DevelopPod. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Tanya and to Patrice. If you want to stay in touch with us, make sure you subscribe to this episode on your podcast app. And you can keep in touch with TDSIG on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Just do a search for TDSIG. Thank you, Christian. Good to speak to you as always.
Good to speak to you, James.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care. Thank you.